fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Ka'Chava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Ka'Chava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to ka'chava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's ka'chava.com, code FITNESS.
Welcome back to the Charlie Cook Cricket Podcast. Now, we haven't done this podcast for about 6 months, but this Ashes was so bad that it has brought me back. Here I am, joined with Joe once again. We are going to break down everything good that happened, everything bad that happened, best players, worst players. There's more worst players than there is best players. I'll let you know who they are. As we get into it, I'm going to say, Joe, did you enjoy that Ashes? Was that fun? If you compare that to the India series that we've just had in the summer, where does this rank in like Ashes series?
Oh, for me, it's one of the worst. In terms of the quality of cricket that I've watched, I've got to say it's one of the worst. Like, that's not to say it was just terrible, the standard was terrible throughout, but it really was. It wasn't great as well. A lot of Australia's big names weren't there, which didn't help. Yeah. Like Cummins obviously played one test, Hazelwood didn't play at all. Like it was tough at times to sort of watch them, especially we're probably looking at it in even worse perspective because England got absolutely hammered. So it probably makes it even worse. But like there were some individual performances that were good to watch throughout. So that obviously was, you're always going to get that in a test series, obviously, but that made it more bearable, let's say. But it's probably the worst Ashes series in terms of quality that I can remember. Like going back to, well, the first one I can remember probably is 10-11. And from there, like, it's all kind of, down under's obviously been downhill. And this is one of the worst in terms of actual quality from both sides, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think that comes, the problem is, the thing that I had going into this series, and my prediction for this series was England would win 3-2. And that was more on Australia being worse than they have been. There's a lot of talk of Stuart Broad's best England side, worst England side since 2010, and it's kind of right. Maybe the best. I think that 2013 side that came to Australia was probably better than this one. But I think the thing that a lot of Australians has missed is a case of, it's not the fact of Australia are bad, it's just they've been so good. They've been like, yeah. 17, 18, 2021 was basically this team but in its prime, and now thought was, okay, they're a little bit worse this time. Okay, they've added Travis Head, and Travis Head's an incredible player, but they were so much better. And obviously we knew that we were going to miss Hazelwood. Lyon is 37, 38 now. Cummins was going to miss tests and end up only playing one. That was where the worst team since 2010 came from. And it's kind of shown. And I think you will probably talk about it later about like combined 11s and stuff. There's been 4 Australia players for me. I mean, Head, Stark, Carey, Boland have won Australia this Ashes with 4 incredible performances, and they've been incredible. They've been so much better. But if you go back to that 17-18, you go back to that, maybe not 2021, but definitely 17-18, there was seven of those performances. So that's where the difference is. I think that's why a lot of England fans thought that they had a chance. Any England fans that had watched any of Australian cricket and saw that they gave India chances in the last BGT, saw that if there's a couple of decisions that go the right way in the West Indies back in July, then West Indies have a chance. They obviously lost to the West Indies the previous summer. They very, very nearly lost. If Pakistan could catch, we talk about Pakistan winning tests in Australia in that series. Like there was chances there. And I think that's what the annoying thing is. And I completely understand that Australia fans come out and say, well, why did you say that you were going to beat us? But I think England definitely had a chance. And as an England fan, that's the most annoying thing about this series.
Yeah, it feels like an opportunity missed, doesn't it? And especially the build-up over McCullum and Stokes' entire tenure, which again, I'm sure we'll talk about that a lot, that everything was put on the Ashes, right? Everything was put on the Ashes, like Bashir, the project surrounding Bashir, that was for the Ashes, and he didn't play a test. Like, there was so much on this series, and unfortunately, England obviously just didn't deliver outside of a few players, like in terms of like individuals, outside of a few, there wasn't really much to write home about.
Yeah, and no one for England had like especially the batters.
I don't think
none of the batters had a great series. There was a couple of batters that had great performances.
Well, I guess you could argue Bethel had a great series. He played two games. Yeah. Obviously got his ton. Got a really important 40 at Melbourne. Like, I guess you could argue he had a great series.
Yeah, his series was great.
I'm sort of scraping the barrel there.
Yeah, but it was just two tests, and it was only when the Ashes was dead the issue. Yeah. He's such a special player. He's so special. And if I said that he should... I've gone back and forth with what I've said. At points, I've said that Bethel should have played at the start of the summer. I think I was very much before that Zimbabwe test that Bethel should play. And then when Pope scored that 170 against Zimbabwe, and you got to say, okay, it's kind of difficult. Because at the time, Bethel was really kind of... He had that great series against New Zealand. But it's just a little bit unproven. And England were going into such a big 10 test matches. And I think it was a massive risk to go, okay, we're going to throw this 21, 22-year-old in to what everyone is calling the biggest series of our lives, Brendan McCullum. I just think that was a real risk. And I understood the Pope selection. I wouldn't have done it, but I understood the Pope selection.
Yeah, it was probably the debate of the tour. Well, it's been the debate of the year, well, of 2025 for England, really. Since Bethel got runs in New Zealand up until the Boxing Day test, essentially, when everyone sort of knew Pope had to be dropped, it got to that point, unfortunately. And I like Pope. I think he's a good player. He's not a number three, and I've said that all along. Like,
no.
We saw that in New Zealand when he batted at six. He was much, much better and sort of hide him from the new ball. It's maybe a bit of a harsh way of phrasing it, but if you do that, I think you're going to get a much better test cricketer. But unfortunately, he's not a number three. Bethel's got a much sounder technique. Bethel's basically obviously got a near perfect technique. Like, he's unbelievable. And the fact that he's only 22 is just, I mean, this is someone who's going to be around for like the next 13, 15 years for England. But I don't know how many tests England are going to play in that time. Who knows? But you're talking to someone who could touch like root levels.
I know this sounds ridiculous, but there is a lot smarter people than me and a lot more knowledgeable about cricket who have already penciled him down for 10,000 test runs.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, 100%. I don't think that's a doubt. Like, for me, it only depends on how many tests England are actually going to play in that time.
Yeah, but, and injuries and everything else.
Of course. But the intangibles, you can't really do anything about. Like,
yeah,
assuming England continue with the schedule, 100% is in at 10,000 test runs. I think he's a
shoo. Yeah, he's such a talent. But the series result 4-1 Australia in the end, and I think that was really fair. I think there was a way that England won those last two test matches, and I just don't think that would have been fair on Australia. I think that makes it. I don't think that England deserved to be whitewashed. I think they played cricket at the right times, and I know teams don't deserve, and it's just whoever turns up on the day. But if we would have walked away from that 5-0, I thought that wouldn't have been that representative of this series. England being able to get a win down there kind of felt where both teams are. Probably a little bit more that Australia weren't as good as they have been compared to how good England were. But I thought 4-1 was really fair.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, really. That the gap between the two sides, even though Australia aren't obviously the strongest, was pretty large, especially with the England's batting versus their bowling, Stark and bowling especially, and Nista, who was brilliant, by the way. That gap was so big that it feels like a fair result. And obviously, Root, Bethel both got runs, or, you know, sort of both got standout, had standout innings. But there wasn't really much more apart from that. And I do think it feels like a fair result overall. I said 3-1 going into the series. I thought England maybe could have won in Perth. Obviously, like, this is before anything had sort of happened with the preparation or anything like that. I thought England maybe could have won in Perth. And then one of the tests would have been a washout. Obviously, it wasn't to be like that. And I was clearly an optimist. So, yeah.
Yeah, I really think that England had to win in Perth.
Yeah, definitely. And
you look back to that Perth test, and they were in it as well. And I think the thing that you miss, especially about that Perth test, is because it was over so quick, and that Travis Head innings. Like, I actually had to go back and watch the Travis Head innings again because I was so angry that it was happening at the time that I didn't get a chance to appreciate how good it was.
Yeah. It was, like, off the scale. Like, it was abnormal, really. Cost England.
We're talking all-time Ashes knocks in that Perth test. Yeah. Like,
100%. 100%. Like, he just took, like, that could have gone either. What was it? Like, 200 and something to win, wasn't it?
It was just over 200, or 220, yeah, something like that.
That could have easily gone England's way. Like, 3 or 4 early wickets, expose the middle order, and you never know. But, I mean, like you say, all-time greatest.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Kachava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code FITNESS.
Fantastic. One of the all-time great Ashes innings. And I think the other thing that really killed England in that test was no Mark Wood. Like, he bowled 11 overs, I think, in total, from what I can remember.
It was about three in that chase as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. A bowler down. But also, someone like Mark Wood, who is someone who can just go and buy you a wicket out of nowhere. He is someone who can just go and rush a batter and, you know, it, one pops up off the glove or something like that, anything. And, yeah, I think that really sort of killed England's chances.
Yeah, and also, the Australia media were ready to go. They were ready to turn on this team. You listen to any of the kind of the day's reviews on day one of that test, they were ready to bury this team. They were. There was the Khawaja stuff about the golf, the back spasms, everything else, and that they were going to get blown away by this incredible England pace attack and everything else that went with it. And England were there, and it was just, again, the bowling wasn't very good, and it's a point that we're going to always come back to in that second innings. Travis Head's innings was incredible, but I can't remember who said it. It might have been Nasser or something like that on the Sky Sports Cricket podcast today. But the one thing that I will remember from this series is Travis Head cutting the ball. I have seen Travis Head cut the ball so many times.
Literally, yeah.
Because of how short and wide England have bowled to him throughout the series.
It was like he couldn't have... I think Travis Head was... Like, this is the best I've ever seen Travis Head bat in a series, I think. I've never seen him bat better than that. Especially given the fact that he was opening the batting, which he'd never done it outside of the subcontinent before. And England really played into his hands, didn't he, with the persistent short and wide bowling, which maybe was a plan, a ploy to try and sort of make his strength his weakness sort of thing. But after a bit, you've got to say, come on, this isn't working. And it's got to be a point where you attack the stumps or try and get him out in any other way. And maybe that's where England could have done with a frontline spin. I know Head's a great player of spin, but again, strengths into weaknesses, especially if you've got an off-spinner. Bashir was obviously in the squad. I don't think Jacks did badly, but he wasn't. That's not Jacks' role. He's not a frontline spinner and a number eight at all. So I actually felt sorry for Jacks. I think he did well. I also think he batted pretty well across the series without getting a real meaningful total. But that's maybe where you can get someone like a Bashir or someone like that into the side. And just he's just the sort of guy who can go and buy him a wicket and get Head out. We've seen Bashir buy wickets loads of times. Even whatever your opinion is on him, there's no doubt he'll go and get you a wicket at some point. So, you know, he's going to get someone caught at the boundary or something like that. So, yeah, I think that's probably where England missed that sort of dimension to their attack, I guess.
Yeah, I can't believe we're 15 minutes in and we haven't mentioned Mitch Stark yet.
Yes.
31 wickets, about 19, I think he took them at. I want to say that he was incredible, because I think he is, and I'm glad that Stark kind of got the plaudits, because obviously one player of the series, and those fast bowlers are always kind of lumped together, and it's not always Stark that will get the kind of medal out of those three. I would personally have in my own rankings Stark number three out of Hazelwood and Cummins. If I had to pick a test 11, I think it's nice that Stark compliments him so well with that left arm angle. But to pick up 31 wickets and basically win them the Ashes, those first two tests, he takes 10 for in the Perth game. He flies through him at the Gabba and with a pink ball as well, as you'd expect from him. Has he got any memorable spells from this series?
Well, it's funny. He got the 7-4. And I guess that England played Stark badly, I think. Like, Stark bowled well, but England played him really badly. And that's what's so frustrating about this. For me, Head would be my player of the series for Australia. I would have given Head player of the series overall, and obviously for Australia as well, therefore. For me, he had a better series than Stark, and I know Stark got a load of wickets, but I just don't think England played him particularly well, and that was really frustrating because some of the shots that England got out to, if you think about like the constant driving on the up or just flashing outside off stump, like it's quite basic, like don't do that in a test match sort of thing.
Don't do that in Australia in a test match.
Well, 100%. Don't do that in Australia.
It's
in
even worse. Match.
It's like basic knowledge. Like, you should know that as a test cricketer going to Australia. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. Of course, it's going to happen. People make mistakes, but it's almost like the continuation to keep on doing that, chipping it back to him and just driving outside or stump. Like, come on, like, back with your brain a little bit. And obviously, that was a theme throughout the series from England's point of view, is the lack of smarts used when batting. But I think Stark bowled well, but I don't think he bowled 31 wickets in a series well. I mean, they're like all-time numbers, and I think I've seen Stark bowl way better than that in a series.
He bowled better in the West Indies.
Yeah, 100%. Like, when he in the pink ball test, he got, was it 3 wickets in the first over, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, he was 6-9 he took in that.
Yeah. That is like Stark at his very best. Like, he bowled very well, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to take anything away from the guy at all. But I think, as well as him bowling well, England played him so badly.
Well, those first two tests, he just realised really quickly that if I just bowl a wobble ball that goes across the right-hander, they are going to try and hit it.
Yeah, 100%.
Instead of leading.
And England don't have, well, Stokes is, and Duckett as well, but the majority of the middle order and top seven is right-handers. Hmm. So he was in the money, like he really was. And we saw him, obviously, 31 wickets at 19 is an exceptional effort. I'm not trying to take anything away from him at all. But I also think, as well as he bowled, I've seen him bowl better than that in Ashley series and other series, like say West Indies a few months ago. And also England played him really, really badly, I thought, on the whole.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would have had Travis Head. Again, you could probably go to the same mantra of England just fed Travis Head's cut and pull for most of his innings.
I think what Head did at the top of the order won them the series, really.
That completely changed the series.
Of course, he won them the first test, and then you could argue won them the Adelaide test as well. And where was his other 100? Oh, the SCG. Well, obviously, that was a huge 100 as well, so you could argue, again, won them that. And he was striking at 87 as well in the series. Like, again, England did the ball great too, but how do you stop that? And he was just unbelievable. And the other player who I think could have won Australia player of the series, potentially an outside shout, is definitely Carey. I mean, his batting was really good at, you know, number six, number seven, but his keeping was exceptional. That's probably the best I've ever seen someone wicket keep in a series, in a five-match test series. He was unbelievable, up to the stumps and Nisa and Boland so often, and just made it look easy. Like, it was ridiculous.
But so you go back to the 2023 Ashes and to Boland, England used their feet really, really well to him. And he just stopped it, just completely stopped it. Just, I think that England could have done it more. I think they still could have tried to use their feet a little bit more, even with Carey up to the stage.
I was going to say, just because they keep it up, just hit the ball, then it's not a problem.
Yeah. How many right. times has Harry Brook charged down the wicket, kind of gone outside off stump and hit the ball over extra cover? He does it all. Yeah. It's his shot. Yeah. He's very good at it. I know it looks awful, and when he does it first ball to Mitch Stark, it looks stupid. It makes sense to take that risk when you're in, not when you've just come to the crease. When you're starting to see the ball a little bit better, and that gap opens up, I still think you can play that shot even with the keeper up to the stumps.
Yeah. And I think that's the sort of calculated risks that England didn't take. England, I've already said, they didn't bat with their head. I think that's a very well documented thing. There was no sort of game plan. It felt like they just wanted to whack the ball, and Bethel is the best example. And well, Bethel, Stokes and Root, but I think especially look at Bethel's innings, his ton. He soaked up pressure so well. I mean, he was striking at what, 55, 60 maybe?
Yeah, that was what was he, 150 off
153 off 100 and something like that. Yeah, so what's, you know, that's about 50, 60 sort of strike rate in that sort of region. And he soaked up pressure. England can learn a lot just by watching that Bethel innings. Like, he soaked up pressure so well. He, you know, was sort of able to recognise a game situation, and it didn't affect him once. If he had to take a couple of overs without scoring many runs, he was happy to do that. And I think that was so impressive. So, yeah, I definitely think that lack of calculated risk was needed to be there for England a little bit more, just to sort of create problems for Australia. Because if you've got Carey up to the stumps, and you're still charging Boland, well, then you can argue, what's the point of Carey being up to the stumps? That just makes his job harder. Even though, as I've said, he was exceptional, that makes his job harder. So,
yeah, and I think they got spooked. I think they got really spooked at the at Perth in the first test, and then at the Gabba in the first innings, of not so they played aggressive in those first two tests, and they drove on the up and everything else that came with it. The two bounciest pitches in Australia, we know this, pink ball test. It was a time that you probably had to take a little bit less risks. Or not even that. I just think it's get rid of that horizontal bat shot. Get rid of that driving on the up. Cut, pull. Look at Travis Head's innings.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
69 ball 100. Like, he wasn't playing sensibly, but he knew his scoring areas, he knew how to score in Australia, and did it well. And then all of a sudden England get scared and take this backward step and don't quite know how to play it, because all of a sudden you've got Ben Stokes coming out at the end of the Gabba test. This isn't the place for weak men. We need Rob Key after we lose the Ashes. We've got to make better decisions. Stupid shots. McCallum's saying the same thing. And it's like, you've had 4 years of this. Of just finish it. This is it. This is you. If you lose the Ashes here, you're probably done. Just die on the sword. Like, just go and play properly. I'm not saying that England didn't play enough stupid shots, because my God, there was enough stupid shots. But at no point did they play to their strengths. England have selected attacking batsmen for the last, I don't want to say during this basketball, because there's been different iterations, but since there is after the India tour in 24, that's kind of a new, that's kind of basketball 2.0, if you want to call it, where Jamie Smith comes into the side, when Gus Atkinson, Brian Carse, and the bowling changes, you get rid of Ollie Robinson, you get rid of Bairstow, you get rid of Folks, and everything else that changes there.
Leach went,
obviously Bashir comes in. There was obviously more changes, but I think Jamie Smith coming into that side is a bit of a catalyst for it, because we selected a batter that can bat aggressively with the tail, and all of a sudden you're asking him to not bat aggressively when you've picked him because he bats aggressively. Now, yeah. Jamie Smith doesn't seem like the type to just... He looks like he takes an order very well. So if you say to him, I want you to do this, he's going to go do it. Then all of a sudden, if you told him to do this for 2 years, then all of a sudden, after three tests and you've lost the Ashes, you tell him to do something else, he's going to be very confused by it. And it was just so confusing for all of that England setup.
Yeah, it was. There was a real lack of clarity. Like, there was no... There was no sort of, this is how we're going to go play. I think that was probably sent out in, well, I can't remember. I think it was, must have been the day-night test, right? When Stokes got that really slow inning, played that really slow innings. That is, I'm not saying I agree or disagree with that. I think he played fine for the situation, which is what we're talking about here. But that is the complete opposite of how the team have played since McCullum and Stokes took over.
Yeah.
And he's basically ripped up their playbook and is playing a completely different way. And again, that's good because that shows adaptability to the situation. And you'd expect that from your Stokes, your Roots, those kind of people. But it was also like kind of mixed messages. I just think that lack of ability to sort of bat without thinking, and some of the shots, like Smith's shot that he played to Marnus, like that he got out to in the SCG, was just, that's one of the worst dismissals I've ever. And I absolutely love Jamie Smith. There's people saying, like, drop Jamie Smith. I don't think that should happen at all. I think Jamie Smith is a quality player. But that was a really, really poor dismissal. That was a really bad one. And I think that sort of encapsulated the whole tour for England with the bat. I really do.
Yeah, it was poor. But the thing, Jamie Smith has had others. Not, this isn't his first one. This isn't his first stupid shot. It's not Harry Brook's first shot.
No, of course. Of course.
They are known for it. I mean, Jax gave him a run for his money in that third innings with the shot off Webster to be caught at mid-wicket. But that's a management thing. Someone has said to him before he goes out to bat, take on the spinner, let's get the quick,
but that's Jack's natural game, like that. And I know he bottled the chance to show how good he is at number six, but that is how Will Jax plays in red ball cricket, white ball cricket. That is what Will Jax is known for. So there's like, I think there's worse dismissals than that, because at least, like, if you hit that a tiny bit, that's going to 10 rows back and we're all sitting there saying what a shot. So that one's not angered me as much. I also don't think, rightly or wrongly, Jax doesn't have much of a test future outside of this setup. So, well, or at least with the amount of red ball cricket he currently plays, I don't think he does. And I'm a huge fan of Will Jax, but I think he was misused in this series. I think the other shot that people seem to really get frustrated by, which again, I don't mind too much, or don't mind is a wrong phrase, but didn't annoy me as much as I think others did, was Smith's dismissal at Adelaide when he hit Stark. I can't remember if he hit Stark for 4 or 6, and then swiped at one on his pads, which was there to hit as well. It was there for that shot, and skied it. Obviously, got caught, and people were sort of losing their heads at that a little bit. And I didn't think it was that bad.
Like, no, I didn't think it was. I didn't mind that.
That's what his role is. That's what he's set out to do.
He'd hit four boundaries before that.
Exactly. Like,
so if he hits the second one up in the air, you say, oh, you've just got a boundary, just chill out. He does it on the third one, you say, you've just hit two boundaries, chill out. You do it on the fourth one, you've hit three boundaries, chill out. Like, it's always, if someone gets out playing an attacking shot, it's always going to be that. He's
Yeah, of course.
And I think the situation that they were in the game with such a big chase and they were still 150 runs behind, I think he had to play that way.
He was never just going to, him and Jats were never going to get there by spending time in the middle. They have to basically just go for it. And there was a time when I thought, like, hold on, they could do this. Like, I really genuinely did think for a little bit, like, this could be that sort of moment of magic that England need, which is frustrating because then obviously if they had done that, one at Melbourne, maybe you never know what would happen.
And Smith the night before played very sensibly.
Yeah, 100%.
He was like 4 of 30 overnight and found a bit of rhythm in the morning and started to hit some boundaries and looked really good doing it. And then
it's the same with Jax as well. Like Jax, I don't remember how Jax got out in that test. I can't remember.
He was caught behind when he he was batting with Cars,
yeah. But like that's what when I said earlier that I thought Jax played well, like batted well in the series. I genuinely did. I think he was one of the players who soaks up pressure well. He batted well with Stokes in Brisbane. And I genuinely thought he had like a decent series with the bat in a role that's just not Will Jack's role at all. So it's one of them things. Like I say, I'm not sure about his test future. I'm a huge fan of Will Jack's. I think he can be a test cricketer, absolutely. I'd love to see him play more Red Bull cricket for Surrey. Sort of maybe reassess the situation. Almost how Sam Curran just drops back in for Surrey when he's got a spare moment and plays Red Bull cricket. And Sam Curran's someone who I think could potentially make a test return at some stage. I think Jack sort of almost needs to go down that same route if he wants to pursue Red Bull cricket. And it seems like he does. But I don't see why he wouldn't. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with Jack is that he's obviously not a good enough spinner to play as a frontline spinner.
Yep.
If he can improve that, then that's fine. He's got a place in the side for me because I think he's a fantastic fielder. Apart from that drop catch that happens, that does happen sometimes. We'll go to drop catches at some point, but he was looking at the rope because he thought he was closer than he was, and he just looked down at the wrong moment. Sometimes it happens.
Is what it is, isn't it?
Constance dropped an absolute sitter in the BBL. Yesterday, day before, like absolutely, looked exactly the same. It does happen, but he's not good enough to have a middle order spot over Root, Brook, Stokes, Smith, and he's not quite a good enough spinner to pick him. Again, on pitches like we got at the Oval at the end of the summer, on Perth, at Adelaide. The Gabba, absolutely fine. That works because you can extend the batting and he offers you something that is slightly better than Root's bowling. Yeah. Whether they want to go three part-time spinners now that Bethel has come into the side, I think probably Root and Bethel will be able to do enough. But I don't see the point of playing five seamers. I think that's a bit overkill. So just four seamers for me and extend the batting lineup, bit of part-time bowling. I think Jax can fill that role, but we know what pitches we get in England at the moment, and they're not that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, I'm a huge fan of Jax, and I want to see him play more Red Bull cricket because the dismissal that he got Smith out with was brilliant in the second innings. Like, that was a really good ball, and I think he has the makings of a potentially good Test off spinner, but like, you know, sort of good can fill a role, not sort of Swan level. But I think he's almost he's a white ball spinner, where I think he's a red ball batter as well as a white ball, but I think he's just a white ball spinner in a way. So I think that sort of works against him. But I like Jax. I'm a fan of his. I would definitely not be opposed if he just went back, played red ball cricket for Surrey, obviously in the IPL and stuff, isn't he? So that's probably not going to happen for a while, but I would like to see him back in the fold potentially because I think he's a good player.
Yeah, I just one Australia player that I do want to mention, and then we'll really give a kind of.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, "Sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio." If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Go through the England team. Scott Boland was just incredible this series. Just what he does. He was so difficult to score against. And he's not, I think, what was he, 20 wickets at 25? I think he ended up with
something there or thereabouts, yeah.
It's not his series that he had against India last year where he averaged 13. But he was just impossible to hit. He really was. And again, helped by Carey coming up to the stumps, helped by England not being as aggressive as they have been with him going back to that 2023 series. But I just, it's handkerchief every time. Just on a length, same line, and it is metronomical. And God, he is good.
Did you see Bethel talk about how he was happy Webster came on? I think it was in the press conference at the end, because basically he couldn't hit Boland. Yeah. And I think that shows, this is a guy who's in the 90s, was on, what, 98, 99, I can't remember exactly what he was on. And this is a guy who is about to get his maiden test 100. It's a huge moment for him. And he was desperate for Boland to go off. And I thought it was a bit like, yeah, I'm not necessarily one to criticise Smith's captaincy because I think he's a great captain. But I think that was a bit of an odd move from Smith, actually. And I'm really, really happy for Boland because he's someone who is a bit of a late bloomer. He is sort of similar to Nisa as well. It's just he's had more opportunities than Nisa. They're never going to get into that side, no matter how good they bowl, when you've got Cummins, Hazelwood and Stark, because those three are just on another planet. So for Boland to have got a full series, albeit at the expense of Hazelwood's injury, which was a real shame because I thought he was looking very good. You know, before in the white ball series against India, especially, that was unbelievable bowling in that T20 series. And, you know, Boland just got that chance. And I'm so happy for him because he really, really took it, showed exactly why he's so highly rated. And yeah, like you said, there was things that helped him. But I think for Bethel to say that, to specifically highlight that when he was in that in the 90s, in the high 90s, is testament to how good Boland is.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, England. Where should we start? Let's start with the top of the order. Crawley, Duckett. We'll start with Crawley. He was earmarked for this series since 4 years ago. 4 years ago, he had a 70 at the SCG and it looked pretty good. And they thought, okay, we're going to pick him and we're going to go forward doing that. And we've kept him in the side for 4 years. He's averaged 27. It hasn't been a great series. I don't think it's been a terrible series. What do you think?
Crawley is a funny player because when he's in, he is so good to watch. Like, there aren't many people in county cricket whose cover drive I prefer watching. In full flow, he's just exceptional. But it's the getting in which Crawley struggles with. Same with Pope as well. Those first 20, 30 balls, they can be a real struggle for Crawley and Pope, but obviously, talking about Crawley specifically, his habit of just fishing outside or something. You can see when he's batting, it's almost hard for him to, or it looks hard for him to stop himself from doing that and to leave the ball. It does look like it takes sort of like real sort of effort, I guess, in a way. So it was frustrating to watch at times. The knocks that he did get in, he obviously got a couple of 50s, and I think he played well in those innings. I think Crawley's a good player, but it comes to a point of, this is a guy averaging 30 in 60 tests. I don't know the exact numbers off my head, but at what point do you draw the line? Like, there's got to be some sort of, like, okay, this is it. Like we had with Pope after three tests of this series, was like, we have to change now. At what point does that change happen with Crawley? Because I respect how much England back there. I respect how much faith McCullum and Stokes and Key put into their team. Whether you agree with it or not, you've got to respect the trust that they have in these players and the backing. But there's got to be a point where you almost say, okay, it's not really working. And we saw glimmers of how good Crawley can be, but I think this was pretty much a standard Crawley series, really, unfortunately.
What you'd expect from him, wasn't it? I mean, I thought he was going to be really good this series. He was my pick for the top run scorer throughout, just because I kind of believed the hype a little bit. I thought, okay, we've picked him. He does have a really good record against high-class pace. Like, Rabada, Bumrah, Cummins, Hazelwood, Stark, he averages 50. Like, it is ridiculous, and it's unfortunately the Boland, Nisa types that get him out. Stark had his number a little bit a couple of times on some difficult pitches, but I think you go back to the last time that Crawley was really into being dropped, and the start of that 2023 Ashes, had a great Ashes and then had a pretty good India series after that as well. There didn't feel like there was any other options in county cricket at the time. There is now five or six options that I really think you could look at in county cricket. I think you could look at Hamid, Sibley, Asa Tribe, Tom Haynes, who else?
Emilio Gay.
Emilio Gay, Ben McKinney.
And the another name I'm going to put out there, this is a bit of a rogue shout, but I think James Roux would make a brilliant opening batter. I think Somerset need an opener. Thomas Roux has broke through now, and he obviously kept wicket for the Lions. So it wouldn't surprise me if you saw James Roux open for Somerset at the start of the season, Thomas Roux wicket keep. And if Roux does well, I would throw him in.
I'd have Roux anytime.
I want Roux in the team anyway, but this feels like a great window of opportunity for him to get into the team. So I don't know. That's just like another little sort of outside shout, maybe that like, sort of an idea that I had in my head. I do think he'd make a brilliant red ball opener, Roux. He's obviously a great player anyway, but I think I could see him sort of making a name for himself. And Tribe is the other one for me who has to play at some point. I think it's just a case of I would personally want him to have one year in Division One. Just personal preference. I don't think there's any need to rush Tribe. I mean, he's clearly a quality player. He's clearly going to be a Test cricketer. And I think Roux's ready now. It's just a case of could he maybe open the bat? I don't know. The other name who, failing those, who would be Emilio Gay. For me, I think he's fits the style of cricket that England want to play. I think he's a quality player. So those three for me would be the options.
I think I'd go Tribe now. And
I wouldn't be opposed to that either.
I wouldn't have 3 days ago. But I saw Bethel score one of the best centuries I've seen in Australia by an away player on basically his second ever Ashes game. And I thought, do you know what? Maybe if you just throw them to the Wolves, kind of throw them in the deep end, see if they sink or swim, when they've got that much talent that I think Asa Tribe has, maybe that's the way to go. And if it doesn't work in the first, for that summer, then you say, okay, thank you. Go back to county cricket. Learn your craft a little bit more and you'll be picked in 2 years' time. This is not the end.
I wouldn't be opposed to Tribe playing. I'm just being picky there. But like, if Tribe was to play, I think he's quality. Like last season when he was playing Glamorgan twos, which is crazy that he started the season in the twos, I was like saying Glamorgan needs to pick in Glamorgan. I've got to pick this guy. And obviously we've seen how good he is as a result.
He started the year at Cardiff Uni, didn't he?
Yeah. Cardiff Uni and playing twos for Glamorgan. Yeah. And they were like, even piling them on in the twos. And I was like, they've got to pick him. They have to pick him at some point. And eventually they did. And yeah, the rest is history, I guess.
The other opener is Ben Duckett. Had an absolutely awful series. Great time in Noosa, but awful series. I didn't think it was going to work for Duckett anyway in Australia. I did not think it was going to work. Nothing about his technique said to me, this man is going to succeed in Australia. He's 4 foot nothing. He plays with an angled bat and he never leaves anything. It was never going to go right. However, it does work everywhere else. And he has kind of proved that. So let's not, again, it's going back to that Jamie Smith thing. Let's hold our horses. Going into this series, Ben Duckett was one of the best openers in world cricket. Let's not get rid of Duckett now because he's had one bad series in conditions that would never, ever go into suit his technique.
Everyone has bad series at the end of the day. That's why people have just decided Jamie Smith is never going to succeed now. And that infuriates me. If you want to decide that about Crawley or Pope after 3, 4, 5 bad series, I understand. But Jamie Smith had five bad tests. And also, I don't think he's played badly in all 10 innings he's had. So, yeah, the same with Duckett. Like, I agree. I think Duckett was definitely going to struggle in Australia. He's played franchise cricket. He's played in the Big Bash, but he's never really done anything in, and that's against a white ball. So it's definitely going to be a struggle against a red ball. And it's a shame, but I love Duckett. I think he's a quality player. I wouldn't sort of like at all under any circumstances like want to drop him or anything like that. I think he's brilliant.
No, he still outscored Weatherald, Stokes, Khawaja, Green, Jacks, Pope. Is there any other batters there? Inglis played a couple of games. Anyone else that played five?
Out of interest, did he outscore Stark?
He did outscore Stark. Although Stark had a higher average.
No,
owed to a not out in one of the innings. Duckett looked good until he got to 20 and then just couldn't make it past 40.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, "Sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio." If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think Duckett almost experienced the case of the 20-30 ball thing as well in this series that he's never really experienced before, I don't think. Like, Duckett's usually really good at sort of getting to 40 and then kicking on. He's pretty good at converting those 40 into 70s, 80s and beyond sometimes. But, wasn't a serious stream, I guess. And it's one bad series. It's a shame, the timing of it, but it's one bad series.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd drop Crawley. I would keep Duckett. That's where I stand.
I would probably agree. Yeah, I would agree. And then whoever the owner is, Rue as like my outside bet, Tribe or Gay, like I wouldn't be opposed to any of those.
I wouldn't be opposed to any of the kind of seven or eight that we've mentioned. To be
fair. No, definitely.
If they want to go back to Sibley or Hamid, I'd be.
Don't see that happening. Like, I would also be fine with that, but I don't see it happening. Unfortunately,
it depends who the coach and the captain is. I think if McCullum and Stokes and Key are still there, then no, we're not getting Sibley. We're not getting Hamid. I think Hamid, if we move on from Stokes as captain, which I don't think we will, Hamid has a really good shout of possibly coming in as captain. If we throw everything out and everyone's gone and we need new captains and coaches and opening batters and everything else. I think Hamid's got a shout of that, obviously. County Championship winning captain with Notts this year and had a great season with the bat. Our troubled number three position, well, no longer troubled, because obviously Starboy is now in. Ollie Pope had a miserable series, didn't he? I kind of feel sorry for him.
He was really not good. It was tough to watch sometimes because he was the biggest victim for driving on the up. How many times did he get out caught on board? At least twice, I think, off the top of my head. He looked good in the first innings in Perth as well. And I was watching.
Yeah, he did.
Obviously, he got that ton at Lilac Hill as well. And I was watching this. I was watching him thinking, okay, this is good. Like, he looks really, really good here. But it's the same as always with Pope. He starts the series up here and then just quickly drops to here. Like, within the space of, well, this instance, three tests. It was tough. But unfortunately, for him, Bethel's obviously now a lot. Like, there's no chance Bethel loses that place. No. A decade, like I said, a decade plus. So Pope's going to have to find a new way back into the team, whether that's his Root's eventual replacement in however many years. But that's so far down the line. Who knows? You've obviously got Thomas Root coming through as well. He's going to get into that. That's pretty much a given that Thomas Root's going to play international cricket. So it's going to be hard for Pope, but he is someone who will most definitely go and play a lot of county cricket for Surrey and probably succeed because he is a very good batter.
Yeah,
it's Bethel's fault now. So,
I mean, you'd almost say that the best way back in the side for him is as a keeper batsman. But all of a sudden, I mean, you're second in that number three spot. You might be seventh in that keeper batter spot.
He's not even going to keep for Surrey. So that means if he's going to do that, he's going to have to keep regularly. If he's going to have to leave Surrey or hope Folks leaves.
I mean, Jamie Smith don't keep for Surrey. They're not only
Pope. Exactly.
If you're picking keeper batters over Ollie Pope right now, okay, Thomas Roux probably a little bit too young, but I'm picking James Roux over him before I go to Ollie Pope. I'm picking Ollie Robinson before I go to Ollie Pope. I'm picking Jamie Smith, obviously. I'm picking Jordan Cox.
Yeah, would you pick Folks over him? Personally, I don't really rate Folks as much as other people do.
I mean, he's a fantastic keeper, obviously.
He's a great keeper, but I don't think... I don't really rate him as a batter that much.
Do you know what? The one thing that I will say, and I tweeted it the other day, is that, and I think you almost missed out with it with the Bethel innings, is you go back to that Pope innings and that first test in India, where he scored that incredible 196. And there was highlights on Twitter the other day when Pope got dropped and saw how good he was in that innings. It was one of the best innings I've ever seen. But Folks kind of caught him as England were collapsing and kind of wickets were falling around Pope. Folks caught him and kind of scored like 20 off 70.
Yeah.
And just stayed with him.
Folks is good at that. I just don't think, I've never really been sold on Folks beyond. He's one of those players who I would put in a bracket of really good county cricketer, not quite good enough international cricketer.
Yeah.
Someone like a Dan Lawrence would probably be in that category. I think he's been a bit hard done by, or maybe like a James Vince. That sort of category of batter. I'm not questioning his keeping. He's a flawless keeper, pretty much. Like, he's unbelievable. The best in the country.
The best in the world for me. I'd still have him over. As good as Carey's been, I'd still have Folks at the clubs over Carey.
Fair enough. I don't think that's all.
Obviously, I'd have Carey with the bat over Folks. So.
Yeah. Combine those two, and you got some player there.
Number four, Joe Root. Finally scored a century in Australia. He even got two. He didn't have a great series. I don't think. Did he have a great series?
I wouldn't say he had a great series for Root standards. Yeah, if someone else had that series, I would say, like, for example, if that had been Marnus, I would have said really good series for Marnus. But for Root standards, I don't think he had the greatest series. But those two innings were just like unbelievable. I think the one in the pink ball test was better because the situation was trickier. And the pressure that was on him, and also the fact that I was against a pink ball, Root's good enough to negate that. But he never, ever plays against a pink ball outside of the 3 days of training that he had, whatever it was. So I think that was the better innings. But I'm just so happy for him. Like, I don't think there's not one person in England who will dispute he's the greatest, at least greatest batter, but I was the greatest ever cricketer to play for England. I just think... I would say he had a good series, therefore, on that basis. He didn't have a great series, but I would say he had a good series.
It's 400 runs at 44.44. I think by Root's lofty standards, I think that's pretty good. Did I prefer the 100 at the SCG? I thought the 100 at the SCG was kind of vintage Root. I thought that's...
Yeah,
100%, yeah. It was, going back to the Gabba test, and it really made me laugh because there was a point where he got when he went from 80 to 100, and there was a point where he was just like, I'm just going to start running every single ball down to third man because I feel so comfortable with that shot. It's like when you play the cricket game and a left armour is behind you and you just kind of flick it off your legs because that's really comfortable and you know that you can't get out to that shot. That's what it felt like Root was doing. And it was a fantastic moment to be at the Gabba to watch Root's first ever test. And it was difficult because... So we landed at 6 a.m. the day of day one at Brisbane. and then the test started at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So by the time it got to Root scoring his ton at about 8:30 at night on the Thursday, I'd been awake since Tuesday morning, so I hadn't slept for about 2.5 days at this point.
That's crazy.
And I was like, I just want to go home, but this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to see Joe Root score his first ever 100 in Australia. I was like, I just have to stay. And I did. Literally, he hit 100. I saw him celebrate and I left and I went to bed and slept for like 14 hours.
I don't blame you. That is dedication. But you're right, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, isn't it? So you gotta grab it with both hands.
Yeah, I thought Root was okay. Brooke, I thought he had an okay series. It reminded me a little bit of his 2023 series. Where he was relatively quiet. He had a couple of 50s. He had that one really important knock again in the Headingley test, but just never obviously still no Ashes 100. And I thought this was his series, and I thought the biggest thing in this series was going to be who outperforms out of Brooke and Head in that middle order. Obviously, Head going to the top of the order makes that slightly different, but it's 358 runs at 40. It's not terrible.
Yeah. No, I don't think Brooke played. He didn't play anywhere near the levels that he can. But I don't also like, again, like if Madison had that series, I would have said like good series given the form he's been in, or if Green had that series or something like that. But Brooke is like, he's still number two, right? I think in the test rankings, one of the best players in the world. There was just moments where he just didn't bat with his brain. He's probably the worst case for just being a little bit sort of like, making a stupid error at the crease, I guess. There was the reverse sweep. That was Adelaide, wasn't it? That reverse sweep that he played. And that wasn't a great shot. In a way, I don't mind it because Brooke is good at that shot. But the situation of the game, that was not a good shot at a good moment. Brooke showed flashes, but I think he almost let the occasion get to his head a little bit, I think. The charging of Stark first ball at Melbourne, I think that was. All that sort of stuff almost played into it. And I think that's why people sort of negatively looking back on the series from Brooke. And he definitely should have done better, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I want to come back to Stokes, so we'll leave Stokes. We've done Smith. We've done Jacks. Let's look at the bowlers. I kind of want to do the bowlers all together because it was a team effort to bowl that badly most of the time. Bridenkaas was wayward for most of it. I don't think he was helped. He's not a new ball bowler.
No,
definitely not. He's not even
in his test career before that. Before, did he open the ball? No, he didn't. Atkinson or Archer. But after that, he opened the ball in every test, didn't he? He's not a new ball bowler at all.
No, I didn't understand it.
And I'm a really big fan of Cast as well, by the way. I've loved him for years. At Durham, I was so happy when he got picked for England that I was buzzing. But he's definitely not a new ball bowler. I don't think I know he got 20-odd wickets, 22 wickets, whatever it was. But I don't think he bowled well. That was nowhere near Cast's sort of genuine ability to love, I think.
But the thing is, he was asked to do a job that he's just not very good at. What Cass is good at is bowling that heavy length, bowling a bouncer, being that enforcer, that second change, someone you throw the ball to and the ball's got a bit soft or the pitch has gone a bit flat and he kind of buys you a wicket. He's going to go at 5 and over. And his figures might look like 3 for 100 at the moment. But those 3 wickets are really important because you've just broken a big partnership.
Yeah.
That's what Cast is really good at. I think Broad said his opening spell, his opening bowling spells was 31 overs, 3 for 147.
Yeah.
It's not enough control with a new ball.
He's not an opening bowler. He's really not. And I wish Tong had opened the bowling because I think Tong doesn't. This series actually bowling a lot of control. Against India, he was criticised for having no control. Think of that famous graphic that Sky made, has been all over Twitter, where he's spraying the ball everywhere, but has picked up wickets. But I think he bowled with a lot of good control in this series. For me, he was England's player of the series, I think. Like,
yeah, in terms of player of the series.
How well someone did, like Anna Root obviously scored a few runs, but I would probably say he was player of the series. I think he was.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic. I thought he was England's best bowler by far. It was 18 wickets at 20.
Yeah. Four from five as well. Look.
And from three tests.
Yeah, I mean, he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. And I wish he'd played in Perth, because I think he would have been brilliant in Perth. I really, really think he would have been brilliant in Perth. So
he should have played in four tests.
He 100% should have, yeah. But obviously England are notorious for managing the fitness of the bowlers and managing the workload. But cast aside, because he didn't really have much of a choice, I guess. But I wanted Potts to play earlier. Potts was obviously dreadful. But I think he had been really, really dealt a shorthand in terms of the situation he was thrown into. Didn't bowl well, of course, but I love Potts. I think he's a great bowler as well. So Potts should have played earlier. Tong should have
played at the Gabba and at the MCG. I know the MCG game, but I thought he should have played at the MCG and he should have played at the Gabba. And that should have been the two games. That's okay. This is what Potts does. He's going to put it line of length. He's going to nibble it about a bit. Kind of Scott Boland light, like nowhere near the level of Scott Boland, but kind of it does that. And we'll do it. You can bowl your 7-8 over spells, workhorse stuff, new ball bowler, because that's one thing that England just has not taken. He's a new ball bowler. We have Jofra. Yeah. I know Gus Atkinson now takes the new ball, but he didn't before.
No.
He didn't do it for Surrey.
For me, there's one obvious new ball bowler who has to play, and it's Ollie Robinson. I'm sorry, he has to come back into the side. There's just whatever's happened in the past in terms of like the whatever beef he has with Stokes or McCullum, they just have to put it behind them now because he is too good to not play. He would have been perfect in so many of these tests. Like, he has to play in the summer. I don't think he will, but for me, he's got to be playing. Like, it's got to be Archer, Tong, and then either Cass, Atkinson, or Ollie Robinson. And I'd probably lean towards Ollie Robinson out of the three of them. Like, he's got to be given a chance, and it's infuriating that he's just never going to play again under this management.
It was also a lack of variety in that pace attack, which is something that we have spoken about a lot.
Yeah, 100%. But that's what they wanted to do. Though. They wanted a pace attack who was just ball gas, basically. Like, if you look at the attack that they had in Perth, Atkinson was the slowest, and he bowls like 85, like, regularly. Like, that's like Atkinson's regular speed is 85 miles an hour. You had two bowlers who can hit 95 miles an hour pretty comfortably, or 92, 93 miles an hour pretty comfortably. So...
The thing that annoyed me about that was that, I mean, it was either Stokes or McCullum. I think it might have been McCullum that came out and said, "Well, we weren't expecting pitches like this."
Yeah.
I'm like, why? Fucking turn your TV on for the last 4 years and watch a test match in Australia.
This is what it is.
You could have watched Bumrah and Boland average 13 in that last series.
Yeah,
all you have to do is just watch a couple of test matches and realise that you do not need hit the length 90-mile-an-hour bowlers anymore. 83-mile-an-hour, dobbing it around, perfect. Yeah. Michael Nisa.
Look at Nisa.
Michael Nisa took 15 wickets at 20.
Yeah. He and Boland were both exceptional. They both did what Ollie Robinson would have done. Well, also with Robinson, you get the extra facts of that. He's pretty tall. Like, he gets a lot of extra bounce, Robinson. Or a Sam Cook. He would have been so good on some of those wickets. Like, it's infuriating. Like, could you imagine Sam Cook at the MCG? And that MCG, like, he would have been...
Could you imagine Jimmy Anderson?
All those times we had Jimmy abroad, and they were just sort of bowling on the wrong pitches, but of course they're going to get picked. And now, finally, we get pitches that they're good for, and they're not around anymore. So annoyed, isn't it?
I don't know. I thought they really got let down. I was impressed with Jofra before.
I thought Jofra
got injured. I still think he could. If that series is still alive, I think he plays one of two of these last two tests.
I think they did the right thing. Like, we've seen.
I agree.
I go back to this all the time. The Champions Trophy with Wood making him bowl there again. That was just pointless. The Champions Trophy is important, but realistically, the Ashes is way more important, and India at home is way more important. I couldn't care less about the Champions Trophy in the grand scheme of things. Don't, like, Wood should not have played then, and we might have had Wood for more tests in the summer, or any tests in the summer, and more tests in the Ashes. So they did the right thing with Archer. The series was done. If you win three, if you lose 3-2, or if you lose 5-0, well, splitting hairs, still I guess. Lost, still lost.
They've said that they don't care about the World Test Championship, so you're not playing for that. Yeah, rest him, get him ready for the T20 World Cup. Let's go and try and win that. I think you need Joffre Archer to win that T20 World Cup.
100%. So I was happy that people were like, there was, again, such an overreaction on social media of like, oh, it's Archer, of course he's injured. But actually, Archer's not had many injury issues or any injury issues that I can think of since he came back 2 years ago now, basically. So it was just an overreaction. And of course, you want Archer fully fit and rested. So I'm glad that they looked after him the way they did.
And I never expected to get more than three tests out of Joffre Archer.
No, he had to play as well those three tests. He absolutely had to, because he had to play in Perth. Then he had to play in Brisbane because Wood got injured as well. You need someone like that, especially in a pink ball test, with how he can move the ball. Hmm. And then he obviously had to play in Adelaide because we were about to lose. So there was no other choice. Like,
England bowlers just not good enough at the end of the day. They just didn't put the balls in the right place for long enough, and Australia's
did. On the side, I don't think anyone... I did think Archer bowled well. I actually thought the nine wickets that he took, was nine, right, I think? Those wickets that he took were not reflective of how well he bowled. I think he bowled better than nine wickets. And also, it's sort of a separate issue, but that battle that he had with Smith in the end of the day-night test was just gripping to watch. Like, I loved that. Yeah, exactly. One of them for Smith. It was proper box office. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it was good fun.
It was mint.
Okay. Combined series 11. Who is? Should we do the openers first? Let's see. I reckon we've probably got the same side.
Yeah, we'll be far off. I don't know. I struggled with my bad.
Have you fudge getting Bethelin?
You'll find out in a second.
Okay.
Okay, so the openers I've got ahead, of course, and I didn't know who else to pick, so I had to pick Crawley because I didn't know. Like, I don't think he averaged 27. He shouldn't be in the team in the series, but like he's better than Weatherwood. He's better than Duckett, thus makes the 11.
So that is also my reasoning. My other thought was to put Bethel to open.
Okay.
I toyed with that.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, "Sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio." If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
I do as well.
But I wanted to keep an opener, that someone that's actually open. So yes, I also have Crawley. And Crawley and Head, you're 3 and 4.
That's three. I have gone Bethel because I think he was the best number three in the series. I mean, Marnus didn't do anything really.
No,
he
had a really poor series.
Marnus was rubbish, really, for being honest. When did he get 50? He got 50 in Perth, right? I think, did he get another 50? He didn't get any more than 250s.
It was a 50 in Perth in the chase, wasn't it? When England would,
yeah. Like, Marnus was rubbish. And Pope was rubbish. So Bethel, he scored, like I said earlier, he scored a brilliant 100, a crucial 40 in that run chase. And then in the other two innings, just got two good balls, which would get most people out. So I put Bethel at three because I do think he deserves to go in at three. And then at four, Root.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I had Smith at three. But I want to go Bethel now. I want to go Bethel at three instead of Smith. I think Bethel's runs contributed more to the team than Smith's did.
Yep, fair enough.
I don't. I mean, Smith, what, had a 70 at the Gabba? 60-70 at the Gabba? And then obviously had the 100 at the SCG.
And missed the test with the flattest wicket, unfortunately, for him. Which is such a shame, because I think he would have got so many runs on that pitch.
Yes. What was Smith? The problem is he's got three not out. So it makes his average look really good. Because it's 57.2. And he scored 100 and 150.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do I wanna go Bethel? What did Bethel do? 51, scored 100, won us the game. I'm going Bethel.
Fair enough. I rate it.
And I'm going Root at 4. Who have you got at 5?
Well, I actually had Root at 5 and I moved him up one, and I'm putting Smith at 5 because I think the way he led Australia was, like, the way he captained Australia was good. Aside from what I mentioned earlier, like the little tiny, really, really, really nitpicking here about taking Bowling off and Bowling Webster. Like, I think Smith captained really well. Obviously, the one test he didn't play wouldn't have been captained anyway. So led 4 tests. The 100 he scored was just like vintage Smith. Like, he was brilliant. I thought the entertainment value he added was good as well. Obviously, that doesn't really get him in the team of the tournament, team of the series, but I'm adding it in there as a factor, I guess. And then obviously the runs he got as well at the Gabba. Like, I just love Smith, so I'm always going to, you know, try and fit him in where possible. And as well, I thought he caught brilliantly, which is just a factor of his game. But I thought his slip fielding was sensational. So I put, well, Root and Smith 4 and 5. I don't know, whichever way.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go the same. I think I'm going to go Smith at 5. And I'm going to leave out Brook.
Yeah.
There was too much promise for Brook. I mean, Brook's numbers don't look terrible. They really don't. I mean, 350 runs at 40 isn't terrible. So, when did he get a not out?
Brook got a not out. I don't remember that. There was no possible.
England got bowled out.
Oh yeah, but then at the MCG.
Yeah, it was. It was in the chase, wasn't it? MCG.
I forgot about that. Wow, can I play to you?
Yeah, okay. I've just seen that on the stats.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, it would have been.
Stokes 6?
No, Carey at 6, Stokes 7.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Just because I think Carey's a better batter than Stokes.
So, yeah, I've got Stokes 6, Carey 7.
Again, splitting hairs, I guess. But,
Number 8?
Stark.
Okay.
Was close to being a genuine all-rounder as he's probably ever got in his career in this series.
What do you have, 250s?
Yeah, gutted he couldn't get that 100 because obviously his highest score is 99 still, isn't it? So he's in that annoying club of never getting, of being out on 99, whatever that club is, Warren's in it as well, can't remember exactly. But, like Smith at 8 again. Sorry, Stark at 8, I don't think.
I've got Nisa at 8, Stark at 9.
Fair enough.
I just think Nisa had a really good series, just quietly.
I don't hate that at all. I think Nisa was great, and he's someone who has worked really hard in Shield cricket and obviously played county cricket as well. So it's nice to see him getting that reward, similar to Boland, I guess, plugged away in state cricket for years, and nice to get that reward eventually. So instead of Nisa, I had Archer. I think he bowled really well. Like I said earlier, I don't think his wicket tally reflected how he bowled as such. So yeah, I had Archer at 9. Also Archer batted well as well.
He had a 50 obviously at Adelaide, and then he had the 35 40 at the Gabba.
He guided him to his 100, didn't he? Basically, I thought Archer batted pretty well.
Yeah, I've gone with Nisa. It's 15 wickets at 20. Couple of important 20s and 30s as well.
Yeah, batted well as a Knights watchman.
Yeah. Then 10, I've gone Tongue.
Yeah, well.
Boland, whatever. Yeah, I've got Tongue on Boland, 10 and 11.
Yeah. I think that's... So we pretty much had the same team there, I think, didn't we?
Yeah, apart from Nisa and
We even managed to fit Bethel in, which is maybe a little bit biased, but I do think he deserved to
get it's not, though, is it? If you're picking position for position, he's been better than Pope, and he's been better than Labuschagne.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he can't score many runs fewer than Labuschagne. He really, I don't have the exact.
I think he scored more.
Numbers. He scored more than Labuschagne.
I think he has, yeah.
Oh, well then, 100%. No, that's undisputable. Yeah, I don't think there's anything sort of wrong with
that. No, that is a lie. Sorry. Labuschagne's got 259. He's 50 short.
He definitely deserves to be in the team, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of two players to average 50 in this series. Him and Smith are the only ones that are averaging 50.
I don't think anyone could dispute that. Then.
Yeah. Okay, finally, what happens to McCollum Stokes Key?
$1 million question, isn't it? For me, Key absolutely has to go. Key's the one who needs to go. If anyone's head's going to roll, it's got to be Key first. I think a lot of this falls onto him. He was obviously somewhat in charge of the preparation and things like that. Like, I don't know if you listened, I assume you will have listened to his interview with Nass and others before the Boxing Day test. And I thought he was really, Key came across really well in that. He was very honest, very open. Nass and others were obviously quality, properly putting him under the microscope sort of thing. But I think that Key has to go. Some of the stuff that he said in that was a little bit sort of strange to me, I thought. He's got to go. Stokes, stay as long as he's fit, I guess, and wants to. Like, I also don't see who else could captain the side.
Bethel.
You mentioned maybe Hamid. Bethel here, why not? The thing is, I actually think Bethel would be a great captain as well.
I think he's going to be England Test captain.
Oh, 100%, yeah. But, you can argue it's not too early. I mean,
I want to Graham Smith him and just give him the captaincy now.
Why not? How old was he? 19 when he got the captaincy.
Yeah, right? I think so.
Yeah, Bethel's older than that.
Exactly. He's done it already. That was a big series in Ireland.
Yeah, well, there you go. I forgot about that. Exactly, there you go. In all seriousness, Stokes, I would keep it. I think Stokes' batting has got a lot worse. I know he got 100 against India, but overall his batting is just really, really bland. I would even consider batting him 8 in the summer and just saying tee off, basically.
He can't do that anymore. This is my role for him, is he opens the batting and the bowling. I know that sounds ridiculous, but he's our best at the moment. Obviously, if you pick a Robinson or a Cook or something like that, then that changes with... But if you're going to go in with this attack, he should have been opening the bowling.
I agree.
And he cannot hit the ball anymore. He just does not have that ability to tee off. We saw that at Adelaide when he was batting with the tail. He doesn't have the ability to just go and be aggressive. So I think you open the batting with him and you just ask him to dead ball it so the ball is soft for everyone else when they come in.
I mean, it's not the worst idea. I really don't know how Stokes' role looks. I think he definitely needs to bat 7 because I want to see Smith bat 6 because I think he's not a number 7. And also, if you are dropping Smith, again, obviously I wouldn't do that, but if you are to, you're probably bringing in James Roux and he can't bat 7. That's way too low. He's got to bat 6 minimum. So I would probably want to see Stokes at 7 regardless. Like, there's no one else in my mind who can captain that side. And I remember they said on TMS, I can't remember who it was, someone said on TMS, there's no one who you can see captaining Stokes again in Test cricket. I can't. When Roux quit or when Cook quit, it sort of felt natural to pass it on to Stokes or to Root himself. I can't see Brook captaining Stokes in a test match. I just can't envisage that in my head. I can't see Bethel doing it. Like, the only possible way is Root does it, but that's a backward step. That's not evolving as a team. I just don't see it happening. So either Stokes plays, therefore he's captain, or Stokes retires, essentially, and therefore let someone else take over the reins. The other issue is, who would step in for Stokes? I mentioned Sam Curran before. He's the only person I would want replacing Stokes, and he's really nothing like Stokes. It's just because he's a left-handed all-rounder, left arm, which obviously is nice, and I think Sam Curran is a quality player anyway.
Rian, I would pick four seamers.
That's the other option, yeah. But I think 7 is too low for Reyna to bat as well. Like, he's in 3-4 or something. So, for me, if Stokes is playing, he has to be captain. And I do want to see Stokes have another summer. The other question is, where do you draw the line? How far along do we go with Stokes at the helm? I don't know, there's a lot of questions, but for me, I agree with what they said on TMS. I can't see anyone else captaining Stokes.
No.
But if he stayed, he has to be captain.
What about McCollum?
He said, basically said to Nas, he's not going to change, didn't he?
Yeah. I'd listen to that interview earlier.
So it depends. If he's actually just saying he's not going to change the way his team plays, or like, he didn't clarify that. That's a very open-ended statement. Like, personally, I would get rid of Baz. The issue is he's white ball coach as well now. That probably creates an extra
sack him.
Well, but in terms of, would then he, if he gets sacked, would he then might just say, well, I don't want to do the white ball stuff either. He can go and make millions coaching franchise cricket, or go and get the New Zealand job one day. Or
what do we lose from losing McCollum as white ball coach?
Well, no, I understand that, but then it's the effort of going to find potentially two coaches. Like, I think that's what England will be thinking, potentially, like the ECB will be thinking.
I get it. I wouldn't make a decision before the T20 World Cup. I'd give him the T20 World Cup.
And absolutely.
We're far too close to even think about that. But I would, I'd get rid of him. I'd sack him. I think Kean McCollum have got to go, and I would take the risk of Stokes walking. I don't think he would.
I just think Stokes' decision is Stokes' decision. I would be happy for Stokes to stay, but if he decides he's had enough because of he doesn't have the heart for it anymore, because his body can't take it, whatever, then fair enough. Go off into the sunset. But if Stokes wants to stay, then that's fine as well by me. Maybe I'm being sentimental there. But yeah, I think McCollum, probably yes. Key, most definitely Stokes. No, unless he wants to stop. So out of interest, who would you want to replace Baz in? Let's just say Test cricket alone.
Owen Morgan.
Owen Morgan, nice. I like that idea.
He's obviously, like, everyone wants him for the white ball job and everything else that comes with it, and how good England were between 2015 and 2019. I think that there is a line that Owen Morgan draws perfectly to how the kind of general public want this team to play. I think we want that exciting kind of Bazball style of play.
Yeah, of course. It is fun when it works. Like, there's no denying that. It's brilliant.
But has the discipline and the stats and the timing to back it up that Owen Morgan's white ball team had at the time?
100%.
Now, I know that Owen Morgan isn't the best test player we've ever produced or played a lot of test cricket, but I think he could do that job.
He has a cricketing brain as well.
Like, perfectly. I was listening to him today in the SA20 and I thought, no, that's who should be Red Bull coach.
Yeah,
if he wants to do the white ball stuff as well, that is absolutely fine. And maybe I'd pick him for the white ball stuff before I'd pick him for the Red Bull stuff. But I think he would do a fantastic job as Red Bull coach.
Yeah, I love that suggestion. For me, there are two names aside from Morgan who I didn't even consider. Trott is someone I think would be brilliant. I would.
I agree.
But I think he, from what I can see, sort of just by reading stuff online, seems to want a county job. I wanted him as Lions coach before Crofty got it permanently. So I could see him maybe just getting a county job. He obviously did work with Glamorgan as well last season, at the start of the season, or towards the start of the season. So maybe that's further down the line, but I would love Trott. And the other one, he seems to love Jacob Bethel as well. So he might actually make him captain, is Justin Langer. Like, I just think that would be, it would be a very out there pick. I don't know if he'd take the job. I don't know if he'd want to come and work for England with the ties he has to Australia as a player and a coach. But I just think that Justin Langer's Australia were brilliant. I absolutely loved them. And I would love, maybe that's because we saw more of them through the Amazon documentary as well. I don't know. But I would love it if he was England head coach. I just think he would be brilliant. So for me, either one of those or Morgan as well, I'm adding to that since.
I like the idea of Langer. Again, I don't think Stokes and Langer work very well together.
No. They clash a lot, I think. I get that impression. Cummins, he needs someone like Cummins who's very much he's more mellow than Stokes, for want of a better phrase.
Well, yeah, it's almost like if you were going to go Langer, then you'd go Brook as captain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I say, he loves Bethel. It wouldn't surprise me if you just give it to Bethel. Like, genuinely, like, the way he was talking about it on TNT was he's loving him, so...
Yeah, he really was. Yeah, I don't hate Trott. Again, it's that clashing with Stokes thing.
Yeah.
That I think could happen. Could Trott be a little bit too quiet for that dressing room?
Mm. But then again, this all comes down to Stokes' future as well. And while there's no clarity on that, it's hard to say which way England will go.
Yeah, I have to admit, when Trott left the Afghanistan job, I thought, okay, if this Ashes goes badly, he's a real shot for that England coach.
100%. Yeah, I think there are two good candidates. Another name, maybe I'm just listing people I wanted to coach Lancs when we sat to Benke, but the other name I would really like is Ashmole Prince. I think he's a great head coach. Has won stuff in franchise cricket or domestic cricket, and also was a batting coach in the for South Africa when they won the World Test Championship. Like, and I know sort of firsthand that he's one of the nicest blokes in cricket, Ashmole. So yeah, he's maybe another name, but I think that's probably less likely. I'd have seen him leaving South Africa.
Do you know what's the worst possible result? And it's a shame because I love both of them. Is Harry Brook captain, Freddie Flintoff coach?
Yeah, I don't want Flintoff as coach, and I love Flintoff, but I think it's too soon for him. I want to see him do more stuff. I want to see him do a Red Bull gig that's not just the Lions, which is a little bit different because it's so separated and disjointed, yeah. The Lions, in it. So, yeah, I'm not sure about Flintoff, but I feel like they're almost sort of preparing him to take over eventually. It feels very sort of Baz orientated, doesn't it?
And I think that was the plan for when kind of Stokes and McCullum went into the sunset together. Say we get to the 27 Ashes, Stokes retires, McCullum says, yeah, my work here is done. And all of a sudden, the young boys of Bazpool in Flintoff and Brook come in. And I think that was the long-term plan that has obviously gone miserably wrong now, because we know how bad that could possibly be.
Yeah, I'm interested to see that one. But I don't think that... I mean, obviously worked together in the 100, didn't they, that combo? And
the thing is, I don't hate Brook as a captain.
Oh, no, I think Brook's a good captain. I just don't think he needs someone who's almost going to like put an arm around his shoulder and be like a Morgan, like probably how I think Trott would be, I'd imagine, and how Langer would be. Someone who's almost going to like be a mentor to him in a way off the pitch.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Flintoff wouldn't do that, but I think Flintoff is very much more of a sort of a happy-go-lucky, is not quite the right phrase, but that sort of more...
It's Baz again.
More laid back. Yeah, more laid back.
It's Baz with a Preston accent.
Yeah, and I love Flintoff. But I just don't know if he'd be the right appointment for England, hypothetically in the summer or beyond even that. I want to see him do more coaching stuff.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that is pretty much the Ashes wrapped up. If we talk about it anymore, we will be at the 2027 Ashes, which we can now start talking about because it is the next Ashes series. So start getting in your combined 11s for the 2027 Ashes. We don't know who's going to play there yet. Half the Australian team could retire overnight after the drinks.
We have one test before that as well. We have the centenary test.
Oh, yeah, true. Oh, yeah, we've got to play that.
There's another chance to beat Australia or to lose Australia more.
It could be. You think about it. We win that test. We win three. We go 3-0 up at home. That's 5-4. We've won an away Ashes then. That's done.
I'm counting it.
And for that, remember to like, subscribe, follow the podcast.
We beat Australia 6-0 in 1 year.
Yeah. Do all the stuff that you would like to do. It does massively help us out. And this will be a regular occurrence, so we will be bringing this back from now into the T20 World Cup, into the Sri Lanka series, into the English summer, and hopefully stay a little bit more consistent with it. But thank you all for watching. If you do want to check out Joe, all of his stuff will be down in the description. Joe, thank you very much for joining me. I do appreciate it. And I'll see you guys probably starting next week.